Well, it's that time of season, and I love the tug of a fish on the end of my jigging rod. Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. And the question I always get from people, or one of the questions, is, oh, what's your favorite fish? What's your favorite lake? What's your favorite fishing trip? What's your favorite fish to catch? And for me, the answer is always like the next one, right? Whether I'm trout fishing or crappie fishing. But if I'm being honest, this time of year, there is nothing better than a jig bite for walleyes. Maybe because when I was a little kid, they were so tough to catch. But there is satisfaction. And the Minnesota Walleye Opener is now underway. And when I'm out on the lake, there are a few boats I recognize. And it's like seeing your best buddies, right? And I've got one of them along for today's ride. Nate Blazing, one of my walleye fishing mentors. Nate, how the heck are you?
I'm doing great, Bill, and thank you very much for having me. So I feel the same way when I see your boat out on Gull in particular. I look for you and wave for you. So
we kind of giggle like little schoolgirls, just because I appreciate you so much, and probably because you have folks in your boat and you are introducing them to your passion. Nate guides up in the Brainerd Lakes area. He is one of the top names at S&W Baits, although your DNA is connected to this guy called Bullhead.
It is, and he actually, my dad, so again, I got to give him some props, taught me everything I know, and he said to tell you hi as well. So
Butch Bullhead Blazing, part of the S&W crew too, and another one of my walleye mentors. Hey, I'm having a little fun, but it is so exciting every time I see your boats out on the lake. Again, because I know most of the time you guys are out guiding and putting people on walleyes, but there is magic to what you guys do. You love walleye fishing. Where does that come from for you?
It's a good question. I guess I do consider myself and have introduced myself to others before as a walleye snob. I love fishing, just fishing in general, kind of like you said. But if push comes to shove, my true love and passion is walleye fishing. And I think it's probably the challenge, and it's ever evolving, and trying to put the puzzle pieces together. And obviously you like to do things you're successful at. And so I think that's part of it, that, you know, you put in the hard work and you get better and better. And all of that goes to the passion of my love for walleye fishing, I guess.
Yeah. And you're pretty good at it, because the pictures I see online of folks holding big fish, you've got them figured out. Which takes me to the real reason we're talking today, because catching a walleye in our state is one thing. Making sure we have that opportunity for the next 50 years is a completely different story. And that is another boat, so to speak, that you've been on here lately. You are fighting on behalf of Minnesota's walleyes, because the story is not all perfect when it comes to those fish.
Right. Yeah, there seems to be a lot of changes and pressures that walleye populations are encountering here in the last handful of years. And we can get more in depth into those, whether it's invasive species, fishing pressure, technology, climate change, you name it, there's a plethora of them. But kind of as you talked about before, making sure that the future generations have the opportunity to enjoy and experience walleye fishing, like you just said, you and I experienced growing up. Once you have that experience and that passion, you're hooked. You go through it, you can teach someone else, and that's what I guess my goal has been, and with that being said, then kind of the spinoff of that where you're going is, I'm president of the Walleye Alliance Inc. group, which is a nonprofit organization here in the Brainerd area. We revitalized or started it again about 3 years ago. There was a group for many years, kind of went inactive for quite a few years. And then as all these changes have been coming up recently, you know, it got my mind thinking, how can we make a difference, mm-hmm. a beneficial difference? And again, a lot of what we're going to talk about, what I try and keep in my mind to keep me motivated to keep fighting this is being proactive versus reactive, because some of this stuff is changing so fast that if you wait too long and the damage is done, it's really hard to get back to where you might have been status quo. So if we can get in front of that and make a difference, I think that's the way to go. And that's my mindset. Not saying it's right, but just some insight of some of the thinking of when we came up with this Walleye Alliance group and started it.
Yeah. Back in the day, 3-4 decades ago, there are patterns, right? Or tempo to walleye fishing. Some years it's good, then it drops for a while. And it's not on all lakes, it's some lake, right? Things are ever changing. But if you step back and look at Minnesota, we are being really hard on our resources. There are studies up on Lake of the Woods, right? Which a lot of people argue is the best spot to go and catch a walleye. But there are so many people out there fishing, those numbers are dropping. Gull Lake, I look back to how that lake used to be when I was younger. It's much harder for me, and maybe that's part of me as a poor walleye angler, but it's a lot tougher to catch walleyes sometimes on Gull Lake. And so we can see that the populations are having an impact. And I think the DNR will tell you that they are seeing changes.
Yeah, they definitely are. The way you led into that, so what got this whole ball rolling, if you will, so say 15, 20 years ago, like you said, a walleye is a walleye is a walleye. There's certain tried and true techniques that, whether it's jigging or lindy rigging, that people use and been successful. A lot of our area lakes in the Brainerd area, those techniques were not producing like they used to, and it all seem to coincide with the infestation of zebra mussels. And Gull Lake was kind of our poster child that we started noticing this difference on. Opening day, I think you did shows up there on opener, if I remember correctly. You would go either pitch a jig or lindy rig, you know, 12 to 15 feet of water right on a weed edge. Well, for several years, we just weren't finding those fish. And also where you could fish before, you couldn't fish now because you had weeds halfway up to the surface. So it seems like there was a definite change in fish populations, fish patterns, and then the lakes changing in general, which we've had to completely relearn the lakes in the last 5 to 7 years. And, you know, you were part of a work group that we started with the local DNR in Brainerd to try and figure out, first it started with Gull to figure out what's going on. Is it a population issue? And after we've met, I think that's been 5 to 7 years, we've now expanded. Our group works on several of the different lake management plans, Pelican Lake up by Breezy Point, North Long, Whitefish, and there's some very similar things happening there. So it's not just, you know, a Brainerd Lakes area. This is encountering all across the state. And so that's why we decided to do something on a bigger level and try and make a difference there.
And kind of finish that thought, we discovered it's a bunch of different things, right? It's a change in population. It's a change in where those fish hide. I was catching fewer fish because I was trying to use the same techniques I was using, you know, 25 years ago. And we had to adapt or change how we fish to catch those walleyes. And that's happening all over the state. But I really want to get to the big conversation, or maybe the hot topic right now, and that is changing the limit.
Yep.
And I think that is a place that we just have to go as anglers if we're going to see long-term sustainability of walleye fishing. We have to.
Completely agree. Yep.
And somebody's ready to punch me, but that's just the way it is, right?
Yeah. So again, we've been working on this effort to reduce the statewide walleye limit from 6 down to 4. We started on this 2 years ago, legislatively speaking. And kind of the way we decided to go about it was to educate folks on why. We had numerous conversations with anglers, with resorts, lake associations, DNR, and we're hearing a pretty common theme. Like you said, most people get it once you have that conversation. They might not right away. They might not know that there's a concern on some things changing, but usually after you have that conversation, they kind of get it and say, yeah, we probably should do something. I'll be the first to say, I do not think anyone's a bad person if they disagree. You know, we all have their opinions, and that's fine. It has been challenging, I'd say, even more so this year, that if someone disagrees with why you're doing it, your position, having a nice civil discussion has been a little more challenging at times, and it kind of gets a little more cutthroat, but we're waiting through that. So
it's not just walleyes.
No, it's in general. It's people in general. I think people are a little stressed out on some stuff. So yeah,
just on some stuff. You know, and this has been a topic at the Department of Natural Resources roundtable every year. This is one of the big topics where all the biologists and conservation officers and researchers and guides and anglers, da, 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 they all come together and talk. And you know, I find it interesting that some of the pushback is, well, hey, if you drop the limit by a fish, even 2, well, number one, that's going to be very difficult. And it's more so on a political front than anything else.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess I would say I'm learning through this process. We tried to go into this with a very wide, open mind and trying to think, put ourselves in other people's shoes. But that is one of the pushbacks that we've gotten, is especially, you know, again, walleye fishing, why is this so important? It's a Minnesota state fish. It dictates so much of our tourism here for resorts, and people come from out of state. And I guess the response that I've had to that at this point is, you look at, we've got proving grounds for our big lakes. You got Rainy Lake, you got Red Lake, Lake of the Woods, several of these lakes that have already implemented a 4-fish limit for several years in some instances, and or Canada or other states. I have a hard time when people say it has or will affect tourism, because
right,
we haven't seen that. And from what we've heard and I've seen as a guide, if your clients or people are able to catch fish, that is first and foremost, to have the enjoyment factor there. If you can keep some fish, great. If it's keeping 6 fish versus 4, I sure have not seen people get too bent out of shape for my customers that, you know, I got to say, I don't think I've kept a limit of fish, of walleyes for, you know, clients, a 3-4 person in a boat. We haven't done that for a handful of years. I usually do the educational piece. Do you want some to eat? Do you want some for a couple meals? I don't need to put 24 walleyes in the live well. That just doesn't happen. And I have not got really pushback from my clients. So I kind of use that as a litmus test going forward.
And I think that's it. Terry McCoy over on Mille Lacs Lake, I remember years ago, he laughed at me when we, you know, they couldn't keep all walleye and people were just disgusted. Nobody wanted to fish. And Terry said, man, I'll tell you what, there's not much better than a ribeye at night after a day in the boat. And he was being a little bit facetious, but his point was, historically, some folks get so hell-bent on, I got to fill my bucket, and if I do not do that, you know, this day has not been successful. And I think anglers need to completely change their mindset. It is about being on the water with those close to you or your friends, and the sound of the water as the boat's going, and the view with the eagles around, and the thump of a few fish on the end of the line, and creating those memories versus judging your day based on pure count of what might be in the live well. And I think if we can get to the point where we start thinking differently, then all of this becomes easier. You know, for me, dropping the number of fish you keep. There was a biologist a couple years ago who said it's real simple. If we drop it by a fish, that has no impact on a lake. It doesn't. If we drop it by two fish, it doesn't have an impact on the lake. It is purely about changing mindsets, public perceptions. They say you go to a two fish limit and that impacts a lake. Then you can start working on the walleye populations. But the politicians hear that and say, oh man, I'm not going to go to my constituents and ask them for that because they all want to fill buckets, right? It's
everyone wants to say, I got my limit. And I get it. I've been there. I've been, you know, but it is a mindset. And that's why, you know, if you reduce that limit, you can still say you got your limit if you want to. And you're absolutely right. I mean, all the science does say that in order to have a biological effect on walleye populations, you have to get down to that 2 to 3 fish limit, which part of the challenge of the proposal that we came here and why we landed on 4 is we also tried to use the DNR angler surveys that they do. And those surveys are a little touchy. They're kind of worded funny.
Yep.
It's a wide range of people that, you know, are responding to them.
Yep.
You can interpret the data, the responses in many different ways because there's a lot of neutral. And so we try and use those, but how good is the data? Well, you can argue either way, but it does seem that you get down to that 2 and 3 fish limit. And that's where, at least as of, I was just looking this morning, the 2019 data, people were not in favor of that. There was no background, I should also say, though, when those questions are asked about, we have some concerns about the walleye populations. Would you be in favor of reducing that limit to 3 fish if it meant that you could have more quality walleye fishing? Some of those discussions have happened to say, should that be part of the survey or not? But when we came up with the 4 fish proposal, it was because I have no problem saying 2 or 3 fish, but a larger population of the public was opposed to it.
You need to start somewhere.
Exactly. And so that 4 fish seemed to make somewhat of a difference. And if nothing else, it might bridge the gap to when 2 or 3 fish may or may not happen. So that's kind of also part of what we looked at when we threw this proposal together.
All right, let's talk more about this. We need to pay some bills quickly, but I want to continue on that and getting people to change their minds. You're listening to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. I'm your host, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods, along with guide extraordinaire, Nate Blazing, part of the S&W bait crew. Up first, we have a great sponsor, and I am a huge fan of Voyager's Salinas. No doubt, we're talking about it right now. The world has been a crazy place lately. You know, we all have busy work schedules. We're juggling kids. I'm juggling coaching, travel. I suspect you kind of know the routine. At times, it feels like it's too much. But I think I have found a way to start getting away. And I do it with my Voyager's mobile sauna. Voyager, they build these custom units for your home, your backyard, your business, and they are the only company, the only one building these premier mobile saunas. They're units on wheels. They look a little bit like a fish house, but they are fancy. They're units that go anywhere. Clear grade cedar benches, spray foam insulation, Kuma wood-fired stoves inside, or Hilo electric heaters. These are Finnish-influenced hand-built saunas. And my family, we love ours. Even though it's starting to get warm outside, we still tuck away a couple nights a week and have a little bit of relaxing time in there. Visit voyagerssaunas.com and get ready to de-stress. Trust me, it works. Also, I'd like to thank the Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shara, and do you really know what it costs to heat water at your home, cabin, or business? No? Well, we do. Based on data from the U.S. Department of Energy, the average annual savings for homes that heat their water with propane rather than electricity is $175. You can save energy and get 2.5 times as much hot water compared to the average electric water heater. Let's save energy and money with a cleaner, greener fuel. Propane. The right energy right now.
And finally, do you know Kinetico? By now, you've heard the Shirks love Kinetico water. It's no secret. We live in the country, and we have that ironclad well water. But we treat all of our water with the Kinetico Whole Home Water Treatment System. We also use Kinetico's K5 drinking water system. You know that white buildup you get around the faucets? We get none of that. Our dishes are clean. Katie loves what the water does for her hair and her skin. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, probably the most important thing I see from Kinetico water before the boys head out to soccer practice or hockey practices, they are always at the drinking system filling their water bottles. They don't want water from the arena. I love it. That well water taste is gone, and the foul smell is gone. We love Kinetico. Call Kinetico like we did, and look forward to clean, safe water. Okay. Nate Blazing is my fishing buddy. He is one of the premier fishing guides in central Minnesota, and he is also one of the folks that is very tied into the discussion in our state about walleye populations and maybe changing the way we think about walleye fishing. And we are talking about a drop to 4 fish. I'm going to ask you straight up. Are you in favor of that? Do you think it's a good idea?
I absolutely do, Bill. I guess my response would be, I would not, and our group would not have put the time into this effort for the last 2 years if I didn't feel really strongly about that it would make a difference in the right way. And again, I'm not saying it's an overnight change that would be noticed, but like you said, whether it makes a number in a difference in the number of fish populations, or if it leads to the right thing down the road where they settle on a 2 or 3 fish limit, what have you. I think we've got to get that ball rolling. And I absolutely do. Even though we said 4 fish, the biology said it wouldn't make a difference, I'm still going to argue Gull Lake. If I'm out with clients and I got 3 or 4 people in my boat and it's a hot bite, keeping 18 fish versus 12 fish, there are going to be some savings of fish that someone else will have the opportunity to catch. So on so many levels, I'm absolutely in favor of the 4 fish limit at this time.
Mm-hmm. So how do, not you, we, convince people that that's a good thing to do and that they can still have a great experience statewide, not just on a couple of lakes, with that sort of change?
That's the million-dollar question. And I lay awake at night thinking about that because, again, it is an education piece. I'm a biologist, but not a fishery biologist. So I try and defer to our experts, which again, I want to give a shout out to the DNR, because I've heard them get thrown under the bus a lot.
Constantly.
And yeah, I will say, you know, I'm not in favor of all their decisions that they make. I don't think you'd probably talk to workers there that say the same thing, but their job, when they're trying to play God with Mother Nature, you know, all the variables, they're doing a pretty darn good job with the tools they have. So props to them. On this effort, they've been very good to work with, whether it's at the local level or St. Paul. I would have liked them to be a little more vocal on this throughout the session. But at the same time, I don't fault them because they have so many different topics that they're dealing with during legislative session. The one thing I did want to bring up is a couple weeks ago, Tom Newstrom up in Grand Rapids has been very helpful on this effort. And the relationship there is he worked on the DNR citizen work group for the walleyes for, you know, 6-7 years. And so he's shared a lot of his data and experiences with us trying to help this forward. And he had Al Linder on his radio show here, I want to say 2 weeks ago. And when Al says something that carries a little bit more importance than when Nate Blazing says something. You know?
Come on.
Yeah. So the one comment that Al made, and it wasn't just on the limit, which Al's been very supportive of this, as has Linder's media, but on several different topics as the outdoors is changing, and this was kind of to the DNR and Commissioner Strowman, is we're at the point where you may have to make some unpopular decisions that you might get some flack about. You got to stick your neck out. And, you know, not everyone's going to agree with it, but we're to that point. And I do think we're to that point with the walleye limit. So I thought that was a very good comment. And again, not taking a poke at the DNR because they've got a heck of a hard job. You got to justify everything when you're working for state government, you know, to get their data. But I thought that was pretty resounding.
And I want to talk about that for just a second because, and I'm going to use Gull Lake as the example. The DNR has people barking that it's tough to catch walleyes at times in the lake. They also have lakeshore associations pushing or lobbying for all sorts of things. You have homeowners who are beating up lakeshore and putting boulders in where there were aquatic plants, and they have green grass and yards that they fertilize right up to the edge of the lake. You have runoff from agriculture 15 miles to the west going into the ditch, which hits the creek, which hits the river that comes into the lake. You have wakeboarders who want their space in the lake with big boats making big wakes. You've got party boats that are doing business. You have fishing, right? There are all these dang things going on. You have city development. And the DNR is trying to regulate and manage that and make sure that everyone who visits Gull Lake is having a great time. If you back away and think about that, at times it's a near impossible task. And that's not me saying, you know, the DNR is doing everything right, but that's just kind of the challenge. And that's one out of 10,000 lakes in our state, right? So it's a mammoth job to try and balance.
Yeah, and I want to add to that quick because some of the feedback we've got on our proposal here is it's not a one size fits all, which I guess I would argue part of this proposal is to simplify regs statewide to make it more of a one size fits all. In a perfect world, we would have surveys on every lake every year. You would have a specific slot or limit depending on what's going on with that lake. But again, like you just touched on, reality is the DNR is not even close to being able to do that. So you're trying to choose the lesser of all evil that would have the most beneficial impact overall, I guess, is how we are looking at that. And that's kind of part of the reason behind the four fish limit where we came to that. It seemed to be the kind of the middle ground, if you will.
Yep, absolutely. And it's not easy, you know, but we're making progress. You go back to Tommy Newstrom. He's been one of the loudest voices on this for many years. And he hasn't always been the most popular, but he's stuck to his guns and he won't give up on it. And it takes people like that and people like yourself to get the change, because unless we keep pushing, it will not happen. All right, it's time to thank a few sponsors here. Nate Blazing is my guest today. Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. You're listening to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. A big thank you, first off, to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Minnesota's wildlife management areas are a vast array of lands all across Minnesota. These 1,440 wildlife management areas are valued not only for wildlife, but also for Minnesota's outdoor recreation opportunities. They maintain hunter walking trails, plant food plots for wildlife, and develop acres and acres of prairie and grasslands. To find out more, go to mndnr.gov/WMAS.
Today is a day for adventure. Cub has all the Nabisco snacks you need to make sure adventure is delicious from start to finish. Life just tastes sweeter when you share Oreo cookies on the trail, when you crunch Ritz crackers at the campsite, or rock the boat with Ritz cheese crispers. Stop at Cub on the way to your adventure. The great outdoors is calling. Don't forget your snacks.
Okay, back to the topic here. Nate Blazing is my guest from S&W Guides up in the Brainerd Lakes area, and we are talking about walleye limits in the state. So let's look ahead. What next?
Hell, that's a great question.
A big bottle of whiskey and a month.
The family's heading to Cab Togama on Saturday for a week, so there might be in between some fishing, a beer or two, and a drink of whiskey. But so kind of the status update for this session is we had two hearings in the Senate, the Environment and Natural Resource Policy and Legacy Finance Committee, which passed unanimously. DNR was there to support it. Then it went to the State Government and Finance Policy and Elections Committee. It passed there. We got nothing out of the House. And that's what complicated things. So the current status of that is it is still alive. The bill is in the Senate Environmental Omnibus Bill. Since session just ended and they didn't come to an agreement, it's all going to be dependent on special session coming up here when they get back together. Personally, I think it's a crapshoot at best, whether it's going to make it or not. I got to give shots out to Senator Carrie Root on this, because she has put so much time and effort working on this, and her heart has been behind this. She listens to us. She knows the legislative process. And without her helping, we wouldn't even be where we are. So, you know, I'm hopeful it passes. If it doesn't, I've talked to Tom Newstrom about this too. We're not going to give up. We're going to keep going next year. Whether the DNR decides to bring their own proposal, you know, there's a possibility of that, whether that's a 3-fish limit, maybe it's a 4-fish limit. If not, I think we'll probably pick the 4-fish limit again. So there's no quit in it. But at the same time, I do think we're getting more people aware, like you said, the mindset, be aware. Why do we have to do this change? Again, if it's a perfect world, I'd love to keep 6 fish. I wouldn't have an issue, but that's not where we're at. So,
yep. And you look at us, right? Our state slogan, we're the land of 10,000 lakes. And what's our state fish? A walleye. And I am convinced that if we go down the path that we are on right now, 50 years from now, the state fish being a walleye, people are going to go, huh? We can't sustain where we are. We need to change. And I hope that people will get on board. Nate, well, keep up the good fight.
Thanks, Bill. One quick thing I wanted to add to that is a whole lot of this is the lakes in Minnesota. There is some natural reproduction, but back to what you just said with the lakeshore development, chemicals, stocking is so important to what we have. The Brainerd Lakes area here, there's not a lot of natural reproduction. It's all DNR stock. So yeah, to keep ahead of that, that's why this is so important, that you keep your eye on and with the variables that can change. So absolutely, we're going to keep our head down, fight on this, because I think it's the right thing, and we want to ensure Minnesota's known for its walleye fishing in the future, for sure.
It's funny. I was trout fishing a while back with a group, And somebody asked about keeping a couple of brown trout out of one of the streams. One of the guys, I won't give too much away, but he was with Trout Unlimited. And he said, oh my gosh, no, I would never think about keeping a trout. They're such a sensitive resource, right? And we have to do so much. If I want to keep a naturally reproducing fish that, you know, is safe and populations are wonderful, I'll go catch a walleye. And I giggled. I went, oh my gosh, like they don't get it. What you people think it's blasphemy when you say, look, many of the walleyes we catch, the good majority out of many of the lakes in this state, are the result of a stocking program. Not because we have great water quality and because we have done everything right to protect our state fish. A lot of fish get put into our lakes to help support that fishing resource. So just don't forget that, right? Like we're working on this, and it takes a lot of work for people to be able to catch walleyes. Yes, we have some great naturally reproducing lakes, but they're minimal. It's not the majority, it is the vast minority. So I'm off my soapbox. I appreciate you, Nate, being here. I hope people have gotten something out of this, and we are going to continue on this because unless we change the way we think about walleye fishing, this will not last. All right, that's it. The Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. I'm Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Thanks so much for listening. I'd like to thank all of our great sponsors that make this weekly episode happen. First off, Voyager Saunas, the best mobile and the only mobile saunas around. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Also, Kinetico. We use Kinetico water and you should too. The Minnesota Propane Association. And our good friends at Oreo and Ritz. Yes, the Shirk Boys always have Oreos in the fishing boat. Until next week, I'm out of here. Don't forget to introduce a kid to the great outdoors.